Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
And you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We were talking before the break to Lou Guilford, the photographer, about his book about the gay rodeo. And actually, I didn't have time to get into it, but Lou Guilford, as a photographer, is a big deal. And he's taken photographs of many major movie stars and singers and the like. If you're familiar with the cover of the Lizzo album where she's naked, she's kind of just kind of sitting there. He took that picture, for instance. Dave says, just listening to the Queer Rodeo, he mentioned LGBTQIA. What is the A? I'm G, which makes me Q too. I can't keep up with the letters. Just figured out the I. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what the A is for, I must admit. And you're right in the sense it's a long list of a lengthening list of letters. And of course, you can't come up with one phrase to cover it all because it's obviously various. And that's the point. A could stand for anything you're having yourself, I'm guessing. But probably there's a more correct interpretation of that. We're also talking about the end of the universe with the physicist Katie Mack. If there ever is going to be you and gravity was to stop working, it's going to be 2020. Yeah, you know, you're right. Your conversation reminds me of that scene in Annie Hall where the young Woody Allen sees no point in doing his homework because the universe is expanding, says Ed. Yeah, a lot of kids all over the country will be using that as an excuse. And also at the start of the show, we were talking to Mark Bryan, who is a chap. He lives in Germany. He's 61 and he likes to wear skirts. And that's it, basically. He doesn't think of himself as a transvestite. He just likes wearing skirts. I just found the skirt guy on Instagram and he looks amazing. And actually very masculine in that skirt. Well, that's the thing. When you look at pictures of him, he doesn't look like a chap trying to look like a woman. He's a chap who likes wearing skirts. He's a size 38 in a show. That is size 5 in a shoe. That's a size 5. He has very dainty feet. Although size 5 feet with a 6 foot frame, he must fall over easily. And somebody else wants to know, does he wear his wife's clothes? Because my daughter takes my wife's shoes sometimes and she hits the roof. She says she changes the feel of the shoe and it changes the shape of them. We didn't get into that, but I would imagine he buys his own clothes because they probably don't fit his wife. They'd be too big for her. Mick in Connemara says, I've only got a 6-inch space in the wardrobe as it is. If I start wearing women's clothes, I'll have to build an extension. Well, that's you all over, Mick. You're so vain. It's all about the self-image. But no one says you have to do this. And, you know, you could go through your cupboard occasionally, throw some things out or, you know, donate them. We also played a clip at the start of the show for Arachnado, which is a new film coming out about a tornado that spawns killer spiders. Texter says, I do apologise for the delay in sending this very important question about a very important topic. If Sharknado was about a tornado with sharks in it, and it was, I saw it, should Arachnado not be a tornado full of people who are scared of spiders? I think they just called it Spider-Nado. Yeah, much catchier. Yes, I know the word arachnid, which appeared in my predictive text while I typed this, answers my question, but still, Spider-Nado. Spider-Nado is maybe more difficult to say, and maybe I assume Arachnado gives them the kind of breath to have various forms of spider. You know, does spider cover all the different sorts of spider, whereas Arach maybe covers more kind of insects and stuff? I don't know what I'm talking about. The hashtag, by the way, is Bushy Movies. Lots of shaving Ryan's privates. Lots of things to do with Veet. Lots of things to do with Brazil or Brazilians. So far, for my money at least, the best one is Despicable Ghee. Time for Movies and Booze.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Delighted to say that S. McCarthy and Jean Smullen join us once again. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad. Looking fantastic. So, Prosecco today, Jean.
Yes, an extra dry Prosecco, which means it's sweet. Yeah, I know. That's the way the wine laws work. And we also have a lovely white wine from Mâcon, from Burgundy. So looking forward to tasting both of those today. Not so sure about spider films. I was the kid who used to make my father sweep the room before I go to sleep at night. If there was a spider in the room, there was no way I was going to sleep. So tornadoes and spiders, nah, that's one I'll definitely not be going to.
Probably best too as well. I don't think it'll be one of those Oscar-winning must-sees anyway, somehow,
no,
from the description.
No,
so I think you're safe enough. Is there a Prosecco season? Because normally I suppose people would associate Prosecco with summer time and a bit of heat.
Yeah, well, I mean, now it seems like, you know, people drink rosé all year round now. You know, in fact, sales of sparkling wines are definitely on the increase in Ireland. And recently I heard through the trade, somebody told me that we're drinking a lot more champagne this year than we ever did before. So I'm delighted to hear that if we're all locked out, we're at least sitting there drinking something we enjoy, you know. But no, I think Prosecco is Prosecco. I mean, Prosecco was first launched in the Irish market in 2004. So it really hasn't been around that long. And now it really is the go-to drink for everybody. So I don't think it really has a season. I think it's Friday. It's day two of lockdown two. It's Prosecco, you know?
Yeah, it's a marathon, folks, not a sprint. And the two movies today, Esther, would one be right to be hopeful about the two of them?
Oh my God, one of them's a joy. It's just a joy. On the Rocks. It's just lovely. I didn't think there was a film good enough this year to lift my mood in 90 minutes, but it's done it. I'm a different person to the cranky pandemic person who woke up this morning. I put on that movie and it wears itself so easily as well. It's like a Nora Ephron film. It's just, I'm afraid I'm going to big it up too much and people will be slightly disappointed, but that's where I'm at. I'm in love, basically, Sean.
Yeah, but it's Bill Murray. I know Bill Murray's in it, but it's Bill Murray and a younger woman, and so there's almost kind of a pattern to it, and you know, you get a sense of what the tone of it might be.
Yeah, it is the Bill Murray show. I would say Rashida Jones holds her own against him, and it is Bill Murray and a younger woman, but it's taking a different slant this one because the younger woman is his daughter.
Yes.
And he is on the case. She has that kind of, you know, that growing fear that something's not right at home and that her husband might be having an affair. And she makes the mistake, I suppose, of revealing this thought to her father, who is a complete character. And he's retired. He's a bit bored. He's a very successful art dealer. And he's on the case whether she likes it or not. And it's just so much fun, this one.
And The Witch is it, you know, does it do what it says in the tin?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's it's grand. I mean, I just felt it was a bit by numbers. And this is a Roald Dahl story. And you don't do a Roald Dahl story by numbers. You don't get the right to do that, I don't think. But it has a very big name cast, including Anne Hathaway, Octavia Spencer and Stanley Tucci. And it's directed by Robert Zemeckis, who's all about the special effects, of course, ever since he kind of used that cutting edge technology first, but way back in the Polar Express. And he's always about kind of going cutting edge in terms of technology. And he's doing that here as well. I need to know, by the way, is Arachnado from the makers of Sharknado?
It is indeed. Yeah.
So there.
You're not a movie expert for nothing.
I know. It's a triumph, that one.
Someone's suggesting they should have a Ratnado or a Horsenado. If you stick all the animals in there, you get a Zoonado, but sure, that would blow the franchise in just one movie.
I don't know. We've got 11 Fast and Furious films, you know. I'd be up for several more.
Yeah,
Sharknado,
I'm looking forward to Horsenado for some reason. That tickles me. Kira says, I watched Rebecca after the review last week. I would have liked the movie only for Lily James. Lord, she is a terrible actor. I've yet to see a movie that she's good in. The same with Amanda Seyfried, both terrible actors, says Kira. Wow, strong opinions from Kira.
I've seen people seem to not take to Lily James, but I actually don't mind her. I thought she was great in the second Mamma Mia film. I'm revealing all my guilty secrets today. I really enjoyed Mamma Mia 2 and Sharknado. There you have it. I thought she was good in that, and I think she's good in this as well. I think she plays the poker face thing quite well that you need to do for a successful Rebecca adaptation. I quite liked it, as I say, but I said last week, I liked it as much for the nice house and the wallpaper as much as the storytelling. And I find not everyone agrees with me on that one. I've seen a lot of negative response to it, actually.
All right. Fiona thought that Arachnado was a movie about being invaded by Iraq. No, unfortunately not. Should Arachnado not be about the revenge of Saddam Hussein coming in the form of a twisted mass destruction ripping its way through the... Maybe, and maybe that's another one on the list. Jean, somebody wants to know, does Prosecco go off faster than normal wine?
Well, it's when you open the, pull the cork in the bottle, yeah, it's the same as a white wine. It'll last about a day, maybe 2 days. I actually have this champagne cork. I have it actually on the bottle at the moment. And I find if it's a special, you put it in, it keeps the fizz in, and you put it in the fridge, you probably get a day or two out of it, you know what I mean? But yeah, once air gets into it, it's going to start disintegrating.
Tina wants to know, can you ask your wine expert whether she thinks there's any difference at all quality wise between Prosecco and champagne? I feel like champagne just has the name and that's the only real difference.
What you have is, it's a totally different production method, right? Prosecco is a second fermentation that takes place in a big tank where it's, they call it the cuvée close, which is a sealed tank. Basically, they make the base wine, then they add the yeast and they put the second, and the dosage, they put the second fermentation, get the second fermentation going, and it all happens in a very big tank. So in production terms, it's economy of scale. It's easier to do. Champagne, on the other hand, I mean, there's so many reasons champagne is so much more in terms of quality. And first of all, it's a totally different production method, right? The second fermentation takes place in the individual bottle. So every bottle of champagne or anything made in method champenoise, they call it, be it cava or a cremant, the actual second fermentation takes place individually in the bottle. And that involves a very complex process of trying to get the dead yeast cells out. And it has a totally different flavor profile. But for me, what hinges champagne's quality for them is that champagne is grown mainly in a place called the Vallée de la Marne, which is limestone chalk soil. And hundreds of years ago, the vignerons burrowed down into the ground and built these amazing cellars that are very, very deep. And, you know, they're all chalk soil. And there's a like absolute warren of them all over Champagne. And what happens is they make the champagne, they let the second fermentation happen in the cellar. And that really does impact on the quality. And the only other place I've seen that is in, I was in Russia in 2014 on the Black Sea. And there was a remarkable place called Abrodurso. That's the name of the winery. And it has that chalk soil, exactly the same chalk soil as they have in Champagne. And they make method traditional. It's Russian sort of sparkling wine made using the traditional method. And what to make it even cooler, the people who built the Moscow Metro, because this winery was originally built in the 19th century to make sparkling wine for the Russian Tsar. And they built the cellars in the Russian wine. And it was the most amazing place. It was absolutely so ornate and so amazing. But that's just me going off the point. But basically, to get back to the original question, it's the production method and where it is and the deep cellars and the chalk soil. There's so many factors that make champagne so different and more expensive than Prosecco. And it definitely is a step up in terms of quality and, unfortunately, in terms of price.
Right. That's telling you, missus. Okay, let's move on to our first tipple of the day. Jean, what is it?
Right. Now, both wines that we have today come from Lidl, and they're both part of the Lidl collection, and you'll find them on their shelves all the time. This is their 2019 Alini Prosecco Spumante DOCG Extra Dry, and it's currently on sale at $12.78. And I'm guessing that's because they've reduced the VAT. And the VAT, as we all know, is reduced until next March. So anyway, this is a fresh sparkling wine. It's low in alcohol. This only has 11% alcohol by volume. Now, the DOCG is for both the Frizzante, which is the slightly sparkling wine, and also the Spumante. Now, this one, this particular wine is a Spumante, which means it's a fully sparkling Prosecco. Now, to make it more complicated, the driest wines are labeled Brut, but the sweeter ones are called extra dry. So in Prosecco, if you see extra dry on the label, it means the wine is slightly sweeter. I know, I don't, can't figure it out either, but that's the rule of thumb. So DOC, the region is in Val di Biadene, in Treviso, in Veneto, in north west Italy. And I mean, I was lucky enough to stay in Cogliano in June 2019. And it's the most beautiful, picturesque, medieval village. And then there's all these wonderful vineyards. It's all very mountainous and hilly. It's absolutely fabulous place to visit. But as I said, Prosecco has arrived here on the market in 2004. And now it's the go-to wine. We actually consume about 400,000 cases of sparkling wine per annum here on the Irish market. And I suspect an awful lot of that is actually Prosecco. Champagne would probably have a good core part of that, but I'm thinking the lion's share goes to Prosecco. So a little bit about this particular Prosecco. Well, with life, as we know, halted again, I thought it would be nice to lift our spirits and enjoy a glass or two of this Prosecco with those we live with and those in our bubble. You get the pun?
Very good. Yeah, very good.
I die so quick. Yeah. Oh, God. Anyway, this, I love this. It has lovely stone fruit aromas and quite a full-bodied mouthfeel. And when you try it, it's got that sweetness, but it doesn't taste sweet. It just gives you more depth. Now, this would work with blue cheese, but it would also lemon cheesecake. Lovely. Or, and I did it myself last week. The bramble apples are in season, you know, the cooking apples. Mm. And I made lovely apple pie last week. And it was gorgeous with cream. I know, bold, but lovely. And I just think this Prosecco would go gorgeous with homemade apple pie and cream.
Okay, good suggestion. Excellent suggestion on that. I would have thought that. Yeah, that sounds lovely. A couple more suggestions on people are getting excited about Arachnado. What about Stormnado? It's a tornado with multiple storms inside it, says Kian. And Dean says, is it Horse-nado? Did you get it? Never mind. Esther, would you like to talk about On the Rocks first?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. On the Rocks coming up after this.
Does my foot smell funny? Because I was wondering.
We're watching Breaking Bad.
What?
It's really good.
It's a great show. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have seen it. It's great. It's not for kids.
What? Was there something bad on?
No.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I can shuffle.
Oh, wow, that's great.
We learned that all young girls should know how to shuffle and how to...
Bluff.
Bluff, right. And how do you bluff?
Poker face.
Poker face. Poker face. Poker face. Nice. Nice.
There you go. It's Bill Murray being nice to kids. Not something he always is, does in some of his films. So that's On the Rocks. And what's the premise of this, Esther?
It's just lovely. This is the world according to Felix, which is Bill Murray's character, who's kind of... all over the fact that his daughter's husband might be having an affair, because he knows what a man like this looks like, because he's it, basically. He's kind of stuck in the 1970s. At one stage, he tries to console his daughter by saying, you know, she thinks her husband's just not interested in her anymore. And he says, impossible. A woman is at her most beautiful between the ages of 35 and 39. To which she replies, great, I have many months left. So it's full of little nuggets like this. You can see why I'm referencing Nora Ephron, you know. It's full of little nuggets of wisdom and lines of dialogue that sound like they're bouncing off the screenplay of a movie, like, say, When Harry Met Sally. And, you know, it's not that good, but it's delightful. And I, you know, I've been missing movies like this in my life, I suppose. We don't often get them anymore. And I'm just kind of delighted that Sofia Coppola has written and directed this, because I always felt she had loads of promise as a filmmaker. Mm. After, you know, her early films like The Virgin Suicides and Lost and Found in Translation. But then I just got a bit bored with her. Like, Marie and Antoinette was a bore fest. It was kind of in love with itself as well. And some of her films can be a bit like that. But her last two movies have been just wonderful. If you haven't seen it, The Beguiled from a couple of years ago with Nicole Kidman and Colin Farrell is way more mischievous than a costume drama set during the Civil War has any right to be. But this one, she's just gone for full-on comedy. But there is a real melancholy in it as well, because this woman is a bit stuck, you know. Rashida Jones' character, at one stage, she describes herself in her marriage as the buzzkill waiting to schedule things. So that's how she feels. She feels a bit invisible. And she is kind of suspicious. There's one, a very early opening scene where her husband Dean comes back from a late night flight, and he's kind of off his head on Xanax, which he took for the flight. And he goes to kiss her and she speaks to him, and he kind of looks at her as if he thought it was somebody else. So it's a really interesting early scene in the film. Then there's just little things, and it's really good in that am I going mad, is it just me sense. It really does a good job at humanizing that, I think. And everyone will be talking about Bill Murray's performance here, but it's a lovely, lovely performance from Rashida Jones as well. She dare not even say this misgiving to her best friends. Like, it's as if she says it out loud, it'll become true, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
And but then she finds a toiletry bag in her husband's luggage, which she very easily explains away as the woman he was traveling with. He travels a lot for work, and there's a new woman in the company that he's kind of a PA to him, and they're traveling a lot, and he says that's her toiletry bag and she was over her limit for the flight. So he explains things away. There's nothing really suspicious other than her misgivings. I must say, though, when she checked his phone and found there wasn't a single text message on the phone, I thought, here now. Or as Felix says frequently in the movie as he raises his hand, raise your hand if that sounds fishy. So, you know, it's supposed to be a drama about a marriage on the rocks, but this is really a love story about the father and daughter relationship. And that's what's really touching about it. And that Sofia Coppola is so good at that. She never kind of bookmarks or signposts for you. It just kind of dawns on you halfway through the film. Mm. And there's a lovely, lovely glow to it.
Given you mentioned Lost in Translation, and that was Bill Murray with a younger woman, slightly different dynamic to the relationship there. But is there, you know, is it familiar ground to an extent?
I think it's its own animal, very much so, this. But I mean, he's a total character. Like, he's a really wealthy art gallery owner. So he knows everyone. Like, at one stage when they're trying to follow Dean in a car with the woman he might be having an affair with, they break a light and gets pulled over by the cops. Of course he knows the cop's father. Yeah. You know, he knows that. He's just one of those guys. Mm. And he's spending, I suppose, retirement sipping whiskey, having lunch in expensive restaurants, flirting with every woman he meets. At one stage, a woman just passes him in the doorway and he feels obliged to say, "My gosh, you look beautiful." And he's just he's a character. And like, at one stage, you know, he's convinced Dean is having an affair because he's so cynical about men's behaviour, starting with himself. And of course, he cheated on his own wife and her mother, which is no great secret. But like, at one stage, she says, you know, he's a good father, he's a good guy, it mightn't be the case. And he says, no, men are forced to fight and impregnate all females. So it's just a delight. It's very thin. Some people might be disappointed with the lack of story. This is about the dynamic between people. And it's a kind of film we don't see much anymore.
Yeah.
And it has a real heart as well. And it's a love letter to New York. I suppose a love letter to old school filmmaking. I would say if you're planning to go to New York this year, it would probably break your arch.
Yeah. Where can it be seen?
Really enjoy this. This is on Apple TV. It's apples and apples alone.
Oh, God.
So if you've got Apple, if you've got Apple TV, it's yours. But if not, I think you can subscribe for as little as a month. So you can technically get Apple TV tonight and watch this for, I think, $6.95.
Right. Okay.
Well worth the money, I would say.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. That's On the Rocks, it's called. A few people have been texting in, as in, obviously, because Bill enjoys a, Bill's character, at least, enjoys a whiskey. A couple of texts about Bill Murray, though. And I'm disconcerted by this slightly. I love Bill Murray and I think he's a brilliant actor. But with every new movie he does into his old age, I worry that he's going to ruin himself. A bit like De Niro has, but doing terrible movies like Dirty Grandpa or The Intern. Can actors not just retire? Surely they've made enough money. I would say that Bill Murray's roles have got better, largely, as he's got in, as he's got older.
And I would say there's very little pond life in there, I don't think. You know, I don't think he doesn't work a lot. I think he's probably quite a choosy actor. And I think Sophia probably had to kind of dangle a carrot here and go, you read the screenplay, it's written for you, you know. He doesn't pop up a lot in movies these days. Mm. So I would say he's doing the opposite of what De Niro did in the early noughties.
I love Bill Murray and think he's... I read them already. Bill Murray hasn't been in a good film since Groundhog Day. There I said it. All the stuff since was just moody hipster nonsense, says Barb in Arklow. Wow.
I'm good with moody hipster nonsense. Yeah. It's my kind of movie.
Yeah, I mean, we just, you know, shouldn't even reply to that. Going back to the question of Sharknado or Arachnado, which is the new iteration of that. Somebody had mentioned Horsenado. Racist Horsenado would be the sequel, says another texter. We already mentioned racist horses at the start of the show. Gil says, slightly off topic, but where did Saddam Hussein keep his CDs? In Iraq. Very good, Gil. Oh, I'd love to be in lockdown with you. And Owen on Twitter says, why don't they make a film called Golfgato, where the 80 people who attended the Clifton golf dinner get swept up by a tornado, which then terrorises golf courses all over the country. Interesting concept. You know, we should see if you can get funding for that. And we have this question. Why do female actors not like being called an actress and want to be addressed as an actor, but they don't complain when nominated for a Best Actress award at the Oscars and other acting award shows? Now, that comes from H. Williams. If memory serves, H. Williams was a supermarket chain. So this is our first time that went bust in the 80s. So this is our first time getting a question from a bust supermarket chain. Esther, do all female actors hate being called an actress?
You know what, I've been thinking a lot about this one lately, I asked a couple of people actually, and people who work in the film industry have differing views on it. One prominent Irish actress told me that she wants to own the word actress, that she doesn't want it to be turned into a male word and have that taken from her, and other people feel it's, you know, you're not called a journalisty or, you know, a film reviewery, so why is the word given a different name because it's of its gender? So it's a really interesting one, and I leave it to people who are described as such to answer that, I think.
Yeah, though it is, the dichotomy between best actor and best actress is an odd, given it's doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and there's talk, I think, is it Berlin? There was talk this year of one of the festivals just having an acting award.
Yeah.
Full stop. Yeah. There was a bit of debate about it. I can't remember which festival it was, though.
Yeah, it would be an interesting notion. Right, you are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk. We do have to take a break. One more wine and one more film featuring actresses after this. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk, where Esther and Jean are still with us. Jean was telling us about a very nice wine from Lidl, and also Esther was telling us about On the Rocks, which is the new Bill Murray film, which he really likes. Now, I'm glad to see some defence of Bill Murray. Bill Murray was brilliant in his cameo in Zombieland. Bill Murray and Kingpin, different gravy, says TJ. Bill Murray has been in so many fantastic films recently. Anyone for Bill Murray-nado? It's the crossover film of the decade. That is an absolutely genius idea. Jean Audrey wants to know, she says, we recently tried El Capo Lavro Appassimento. It was amazingly full-bodied. Are all Appassimento wines like this, and can you recommend any others to try?
That's the technique whereby they use dried grapes to give. It's the same. Amarone uses the same principle. The wine is passed through the dried grape that are usually air dried. You know, they hang the bunches of grapes on the ceiling, or they have them in these kind of special. What you call it, sort of barns that, you know, where all of the grapes are dried in these big cages, and, you know, it's all kind of quite naturally done. But the dried grape is obviously a raisin and it's very concentrated. So they add that, or they pass it through the fermentation, and it brings that sort of sweetness and that roundness to the palate. So, yes, that style, it's a very traditional winemaking style from northwestern Italy, which was kind of revived about 30 years ago and now has become so fashionable. You know, ricciotto, appassimento, amarone, it's now very much sought after wine style.
Donald has a question though. This is very specific. Are there any good wines from Virginia, that being Virginia in the US, available in Ireland?
I don't think you'll get any wines from Virginia available in Ireland, but my memory, and I didn't make it to Virginia, but I did make it to North Carolina a couple of years ago. There's Vitis rupestris, which is the American gene of the Vitis. There's Vitis vinifera, which is the Latin name for the vine that actually produces the grapes that are made into wine. And then Vitis rupestris, which is the American vine. And they don't have bunches of grape. They tend to produce these large kind of almost large size single grapes. Anyway, the thing about the American grape is that it has this kind of foxy character to it. And it's not the Concord grape now that they use to make the grape jelly. It's slightly different. But it takes a bit of getting used to, and it's very local and it's very indigenous. So those are the wines that they would be making in Virginia. They would have the Vitis vinifera vines, obviously, but they're probably obviously making the American vine. And it's kind of just local, and it tends to be the locals drink it. So we don't see it on the export market. And the only place I've ever tasted it was in the United States. So the answer to the question is no.
No. Yeah. Now, I think I recall this question came up during lockdown one, but I suppose the fear will be revived. Does Jean know if there's been any issues with vineyards since coronavirus started? There's no fear we'll like run out of new wines being produced. Genuinely concerned, says this text.
No. And you know what? If anything, the problem a lot of like, they weren't able to sell last year's vintage because most of the restaurants all over the world closed down.
Oh.
And so now they've harvested, particularly, say, in Europe. They've just gone through the harvest, the 2020 harvest, and they'll be trying to sell that from next year, plus the previous vintage. So if anything, there's going to be an awful lot of wineries out there all over the world trying to sell their wines. And, you know, we don't know how long restaurants are going to stay closed. We don't know how long this is going to go on for. And the longer that there is nowhere that tourism is impacted, the longer that there's nowhere for anywhere to go, the more wine there is going to be for them to sell. Now, thankfully, the distribution is very, very good and very, very up to speed. And we're getting containers coming in with wine on it on a daily basis into the Irish market. And there are absolutely no problems with the logistics. So don't panic. There'll be plenty of wine.
Yeah, I bet there are tankers coming in every day. Right, let's move on to our second wine of the day, Jean. Tell
okay,
us
again, this is another Lidl wine. This is their Macon Village. It's an AOP, an Appellation Origin Protégé. It's 2019, the vintage, and the price is $9.82. Now, Macon is a region in Burgundy to the south of the region. The most famous Burgundian wine regions are Chablis, which is way up to the north in the Yonne Valley. You've got Mâcon, you've Côte Chalonnais and Côte d'Or. Those are where all the premium wines can be found. But the home of Chardonnay is actually Burgundy. That's where the grape originated from. So I'm saying the C word. This is Chardonnay. Now, Chardonnay has begun to have a bit of a revival, particularly the less oaked style Chardonnay, which we're seeing much more of from all of the regions. The winemakers have realized people don't like heavily oak Chardonnay. They prefer the lovely melon fruit, the lovely tropical fruit nuances to come through without being absolutely slathered in oak. So these days you'll find people who are making this grape are much more light-handed on the oak. And that's certainly the case with this particular wine. The thing about Chardonnay is, as a grape variety, it has medium acidity and quite broad fruit flavors. It's grown everywhere in the world that wine is made because it's an easy grape to grow. So most producers don't have a problem with growing it. So, you know, let's bung a bit in there and we'll have no problem with the harvest and we'll make the wine grand. So off you go. But the thing about Chardonnay is that it can have so many different flavor profiles. Like, for example, Chardonnay grown in Chablis up in the north of the Burgundy and in the Yonne Valley tends to be much more acidic, green apples. They don't tend to use wood in the aging process. And you tend to get a lean, mean, apple-y kind of characteristic coming from the Chardonnay grape. But if you go further south down to the Mâconnais, which is to the south of Burgundy, almost just, you know, next stop is Beaujolais. These Chardonnays grown here tend to be riper, more opulent, and they do age them in wooden barrels, which will give you the spiciness, buttery, creamy tones. So this is actually a super Mâcon village for under a tenner. Now, I have to say, it's got lots of ripe tropical fruits, lots of melon flavors and pineapple. What I got when I just tried the second go, spiciness, there's a lovely spicy character coming through on this. It's very drinkable. I love Chardonnay anyway. I mean, I'm somebody who's always been a fan, and it never kind of went out of favor as far as I'm concerned. And I'm lucky enough to have been to Burgundy many times and tried some seriously good Chardonnay. So I know what the good stuff really tastes like. But this is a really good Mâcon village. At this price, it offers great value. And the thing about Chardonnay as a grape variety is that it's pretty versatile if you're going to match it with food. Like, it goes well with fish, chicken, you know, the usual. They put them on the back of the label. But what I think is the influence of the oak, which kind of adds the spiciness to the final style, means that if you're cooking anything with stronger flavors, like herbs or spices or even a bit of chili in there, something with a bit of heat, this grape produces wines that are big enough to stand up to it. So it means, you know, if you want to be a bit more adventurous and you want something to go with, a white wine to go with it, Chardonnay definitely is the grape to go for. And this is the Lidl Mâcon Village AOP 982.
Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is The Witches. Here's a clip.
A note about witches. They're real.
Witches aren't really women at all. They're demons in human shape.
In every big city, in every small town, they live amongst us. And here's the most important thing. Witches hate children.
Boom. Okay, so, and this is a remake, Esther, so was there any need for one?
No, I mean, Nicholas Rogue famously brought his dark style to the one starring Angelica Houston in 1990, 30 years ago now, would you believe? Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of up there in children's scariest formative movies of all times. So this doesn't have any of that. It doesn't have any of that menace to it, I suppose. It's very PG, I think. And I think it's a problem I've had with Robert Zemeckis all through his career. Like, he's technically ahead of the game as a filmmaker. He's always doing cutting edge in terms of visual effects. And he's doing it here using a lot of CGI to bring on the exaggerated scares. And of course, that famous scene where Anne Hathaway's witch first reveals her fearsome set of teeth. And that people will remember that from the first film as well. But the just, as he does in so many of his other films, it just swamps the story. And I mean, why adapt a Roald Dahl story and not bring the Roald Dahlness to it, you know? It's very arch and camp, and family audiences will probably get 2 hours entertainment out of it, but it's reaching too hard. It's trying to reinvent the story visually, but it just felt really strange to me. They've moved the action to kind of 1960s Alabama as well, which is interesting. So it's a different take in terms
Why?
Of race.
Are they like racist witches?
No, they're just looking at it through another storyteller's eyes, I guess. It's a young black boy who's been orphaned following a tragic car accident in the film's opening scenes. And then he's taken under the wing of his grandmother, played by Octavia Spencer, who's just always good in everything she does and shows up here again. And she's kind of telling him all these stories about witches and how they behave and their quirks and their spookiness. But what they don't expect is when they head for a holiday in a fancy hotel, that a local coven of witches is having, I suppose, you call it a witch conference. There's a whole group of them meeting in the hotel for the weekend. And this conference has been run by Grand High Witch, who's Anne Hathaway. If you think Anne Hathaway is an over-the-top actor, and I know a lot of people do, wait till you see her here.
Oh,
my God.
Okay, all right.
Scenery gets chewed, you know.
I'm going to stop you there, Esther, because I think we've heard more than enough about that film to make a decision about it. Esther and Jean, thank you both very much. Always a joy as ever. Kieran's up next on The Hard Shoulder on News Talk. That's our lot for today. Our production team today, Claire Collins, Simon Tierney, Michael Quilligan, and here's Aidan McKelvey.
You can't pretend it's too soon, that it's not the moon. For though there were times when the sun was high, I wouldn't say he's alone in that sky.
And Booze on Moncrief,
brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.